Hey, what's up? This is Tiffany Shepis, and you're listening to Slugcast.
You better listen when I speak of freaking geek convention. Hunter fan of speedrunners and chicks and stunners. Yeah, you gotta know she listening. She licking on my beardy chin.
I'm assuming that they tell their mothers
no. Well, bummer. Yeah, I'm into smelling glue, Doctor Who, kinky interviews, black caps, dark rims, and black and white shoes. Bad movies, good music, and I like vagina too. On a side note, I make my own beer. Who wanna brew? It's the Slugcast.
It's been a long ass time, and I'm way too close to the microphone again, and we're not going to cut that out. So, anyway, it's been a long time since we've done a show here at Slugcast, but we're doing one now. So, there we go. I'm sitting here with my friend Ben.
Hello.
And he and I are going to talk about our experience this past weekend at ConX Kansas City in Kansas City. So, can you tell why this is such an awkward show all the time? We actually have a studio audience, too. This is Leanne. She's in the background. You may hear her giggle every once in a while. If not, it's just because she's too far from the microphones, but she's laughing. But anyway, so, yeah. I had the pleasure of attending ConX the first year that they've done it here in Kansas City, and Ben stopped by on Sunday.
Yeah, it was Sunday. Got there. It was a little bit after they opened. I think they're open for about 20 minutes before I got there. It was still rather slow. Yeah. Even for a Sunday from any other convention I've been to,
okay.
Seemed rather slow.
I was actually going to ask you that. Was this your first sci-fi convention?
Yeah, definitely my first sci-fi convention. I've been to quite a few tattoo conventions and gun shows, conventions, that type of thing.
The more manly, less nerdy ones. So, now, I'm not going to sit here and say that a nerd is a negative word. Sometimes it can be, but in this case, the nerdiness was flowing quite heavily, and it was very fun. So, I personally had a great time the entire weekend. Saw some things you're never going to see anywhere else, some of which will be discussed at a later time.
Over drinks.
If you find me somewhere, buy me a beer, I'll tell you the story. But I saw things like a guy in a predator costume giving a woman a leg massage at the massage table. So, did you see that at all?
No, I didn't.
I'll show you the pictures later. Actually, you know what? I will post them in the show notes. That's the fun part about the internet, is I can post things in the show notes.
Gotta love the internet.
So, yeah. Basically, the whole theme of the weekend was basically Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica, and I think Stargate. There was some Stargate people there.
Yeah.
And it was pretty fun. There was a lot of celebrities that I never thought I'd meet, let alone have 3-hour long conversations with. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But this episode is going to have a lot of clips and bumpers. As you heard earlier, I got an interview, or not interview, sorry, I got a bumper from Tiffany Shepis, the horror movie scream queen that she is. She was awesome, and basically spent the entire weekend just breaking my balls, which I'm fine with because it's Tiffany Shepis, and you're not going to say, no, Tiffany Shepis, don't break my balls the whole weekend. So, but I got interviews with Camden Toy, Tom Kane, Leslie Easterbrook, and I'm going to feel like an idiot for forgetting any others that I have. But I actually had a fairly fruitful interview session at the convention. So there was actually a lot more set up, but a few of them I was actually unable to actually get to before they had to get on their flights and go home. I was actually going to interview the cast of the Paranormal Activity movies, and all their flights left at the same exact time, so I wasn't able to get an interview with them. But they've told me the next time they're in town, they will do one, so that's cool. But yeah, we'll go ahead and play the interview that I did with Camden Toy right now. For those of you who don't know, Camden Toy does a lot of prosthetic work, but he also does just, you know, mainstream acting as well. He starred in, and we actually talk about it in the interview, starred in the episode Hush of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Anyway, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which in my opinion is the best episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But yeah, just a really, really cool guy. I learned a ton of stuff from him, and he and I actually talked for about 15, 20 minutes before we even hit record on the recorder. So, here's the interview. So check it out.
All right. This is Slug. I'm here at ConX Kansas City with Camden Toy.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, could you give me a little bit of back history on how you got involved in doing some of the work you've done?
Well, I got involved in the business originally because I grew up in a theatrical family. I literally grew up in the theater. My first introduction to character was actually through my father's background as an actor and a makeup artist. And he and I would play with makeup as a kid. I mean, I was this early grade school, and we would do, like, you know, putty noses and beards and just, you know, really have fun stuff. And also, when I was about 10, Dick Smith put out his Monster Makeup Handbook, and I dove on that. Oh my God, I loved that. So that was really fun. And then, you know, I acted off and on, you know, since I was a kid. But the way I got involved, say, with Buffy, I mean, I got called in through my agent. You know, my agent called me and they said, "Hi, Buffy wants to see you tonight at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock, whatever it was." And I was like, "Tonight? Usually it's like the next day or 2 days. You have time to prepare." I'm like, "What, tonight? Well, what about a script?" "There is no script. Just go. It's an improv, you know." I'm like, okay. So that's actually how I first got involved with Buffy. I was actually called in via my agent. And, you know, and then subsequently after that, I was called in, you know, through the casting people. The casting people call me directly or whatnot.
Yeah. And a lot of my listeners are actually huge Buffy fans. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends actually do Buffy podcasts. So,
oh, okay.
Blanking on the names of that right now, and they're going to kill me for that. but they will be freaking out that I've actually interviewed
them. Oh, cool.
For those of you who don't know, Camden here was in the episode Hush.
Yeah,
season four.
It's the first episode I did with Buffy. Yeah, season four. It was a totally silent episode, except for a very short beginning and a short end that had some dialogue. But everything else was silent. Yeah. Yeah.
And my personal favorite little anecdote of why that episode exists is because everybody was just saying, you know, Joss Whedon relies on dialogue way too much, and he can't do anything but dialogue. So he's just like, you know what, screw you, I'm going to do an episode where there's no talking, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, pretty
and
wild.
Like I was telling you earlier, it is my favorite episode.
Oh, well, thank
and
you.
I'm not even, I'll admit, I'm going to get some hate for this, I'm not even the biggest Buffy fan, but I've been told select episodes to watch.
Right.
And Hush was in there.
Yeah.
And...
Well, Hush is definitely a standalone episode. For those of you who have not been Buffy fans, there are plenty of my fans who are not a Buffy fans, but they're horror fans.
Yeah.
And the majority of episodes of Buffy are not horror. They're actually the demons and monsters on Buffy are mostly kind of metaphors for the demons that we deal with growing up. But Hush is truly a horror episode.
Yeah.
Which kind of and it even took Buffy fans by surprise, because you don't expect to tune into Buffy and go, "Oh, that's scary," you know, that kind of thing. You're not expecting that. So that was something that really took people by surprise.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, I'm a big fan of prosthetic work. So how did you kind of gravitate towards mostly prosthetic?
Well, I haven't done mostly prosthetic, actually, believe it or not. I mean, I that's really what I'm mostly known for.
Okay.
That's mostly what people want my autograph for, because that's probably the most famous. I mean, Buffy is, you know, probably still the number one cult show of all times at this point. So And I played more villains on the show than anybody else.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, like last season I worked on a, I was a regular on a sitcom called Goodnight Burbank. I've had an ongoing recurring role on a soap opera called The Bay, which just got nominated for an Emmy Award last year. I've probably done over 100 independent films over the years. But that's not uncommon, even for well-known actors. That, you know, we are usually known for specific roles, you know.
Almost typecast in a way.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's like every, you think about most famous actors or even unfamous actors, you know, whatever. You know, we're all known for, you know, very specific roles generally. And then, you know, there are certainly those roles we've done outside of those, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And if anybody would like to get a hold of you or check out any of your work, how would you like to...
Yeah, sure. It's very easy. Well, I'm the only Camden Toy on Facebook, as far as I know. It's C-A-M-D-E-N, like Camden Town in London, and Toy, like the things you play with, T-O-Y, so Camden Toy. And I have... My main page is totally filled.
Yeah.
it's already overflowing with friends. But you can subscribe to the public posts, which all of them are public posts, so you just hit subscribe so you can subscribe to it. And also I have an actor page as well that you can hit like. And I'm also on Twitter. It's Camden underscore toy on Twitter. And there's also, I have a web page, which unfortunately it's a little neglected right now. I need to do some updating on my webpage. But it's CamdenToy.com.
Okay.
And it's still fun to watch. It's still fun to look at. Yeah, there's still some fun things on it. Yeah. But so people have been using Facebook so much nowadays that I've actually been concentrating more on the Facebook pages. Funny thing. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, man.
Thank you.
All right. So that was Camden Toy, and I highly recommend everybody go check out his work. Very, very nice guy. Awesome, awesome prosthetic work that this guy's done. So, and then, you know, throughout the weekend, I had the opportunity to talk with a bunch of the vendors and some filmmakers, including some local filmmakers, just independent. Did I already say local? Local a bunch of times. I'm just going to say local. But I got to talk to a bunch of people from different organizations that were at the convention, just basically promoting their organizations and getting things done. So, some of the different vendors that they had at the booth were the 501st Legion.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
The Costume Club. Yeah, they do a lot of Star Wars cosplay, and they make like Stormtrooper costumes and Darth Vader costumes and just all kinds of different costumes and wear them at conventions and. You actually probably talked to him more than I did.
Yeah, I stopped and talked for a little bit and saw a poster there on the table. I was like, ooh, I want to get that poster. And walked up and asked him, how much is the poster? I said, posters are free. We're just asking for a donation. So I just, you know, reached in my pocket and pulled out some money and stuff in the jar and then dug through and got a poster. Talked to him a little bit about what they do. And they get together. They have a kind of a loose schedule. They just... on the forum say, we're getting together over here, and they get together, make some costumes, work on that kind of stuff, and whenever there's a need for them to show up somewhere, they post out on their forums, hey, we're going to go out over here, who's down, and they get people to just sign up and show up. Had a few Mandalorian people there in costume, and also had a Jawa. It was like a 6-foot tall Jawa. It's like, wait a minute,
yeah,
he's a little bit big,
slightly tall.
Jawa on steroids.
But it was still entertaining. And you see the Tusken Raider?
No, I missed the Tusken
Raider. Oh God, that was awesome. He actually had a voice box in there, so every time he would raise the staff up, go and just. It was amazing, and that's going to sound amazing on the podcast later on.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that was pretty entertaining to see. But they also had the R2-D2 Builders Club, and this is a group of people who get together and do exactly what they say. They build R2-D2s, and I was asking him how much it would be to get one for myself, and I think I would need to get like 4 more jobs to just be able to justify spending the money to get one just to put in the corner of my living room. But he was talking about like you could do anything from like real inexpensive wood and plastic all the way up to like machine shop aluminum R2D2s with fully functioning light and sound, and is remote controlled, and those run several thousand dollars. But I really, really want one. So I think I'm going to have to save up a little bit.
As I was about 10 feet from their booth, I saw them sitting there. I was like, ooh, wow, I got to make it over there. And as I turn around and start heading that way, the guy is in the middle of packing. I was like, oh, okay. So he's out of there. And that was pretty early. Yeah. It started closing up pretty early on Sunday.
Yeah. For anybody thinking about going to a convention, I recommend go usually the second day. It usually tends to be a lot busier. Everybody's at their booths, and the fans are out in full force, and it is packed, and you get to see a lot of people in costumes, and a lot of people just, you know, are there to just experience a convention. Unfortunately, you weren't able to make it out for the other 2 days, but you got to see some of it, so that was cool.
Yeah, I did.
Something that we both missed, though, that I found out about... I think it was on Saturday, they had a full-size DeLorean from Back to the Future set up in the show floor, and so I saw that. But what I didn't know about was if you had gone outside, they had Kit from Knight Rider.
Oh, nice.
They had the General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard. They had the Ghostbusters car. They had, like, five or six other cars that were all just outside that I never saw. And let me rephrase that. I did see them as they were driving away because I heard the General Lee's horn honking, and I turned and looked up. I was like, oh, what idiot got the General Lee's horn? And I look, and it's the General Lee driving off. So I was like, oh my God. And then I look, and right behind it, there comes Kit with the lights going back and forth in front. And I was just like, no! How did I miss all of these cars? This is awesome! So, I missed that whole thing. And something else that was going on concerning the R2-D2 Builders Club was one of the guys actually had a finished remote-controlled R2-D2 that he was walking around the show floor, and people were taking pictures with it. And it was full-size, and it was awesome. And I wanted to take it home for myself. But I think it probably would have weighed down the car. So,
it's a new beer bot.
Yeah. Bring me a beer.
It has one button, and the button says, fetch beer.
R2 beer 2. That was dumb. I should cut that out, but I'm not going to. So, R2 beer 2. I really want to get a tattoo now of R2 beer 2. It's just a beer can that lights up and beeps a bunch. So, oh, that would be great. So, another one of the vendors that was there was the D20 Girls Project, and I've actually got to meet them at Planet Comic Con not last year, it was a few months back in, I believe, April, and I just kind of stopped by their booth at Planet Comic Con and just kind of got a gist of what they were all about, and ran into them again here at Con X, and actually had a little bit more time to sit down and talk to them. And I got to do an interview with Gracie B. Love of the D20 Girls Project. So here's the audio from that.
All right, I'm here with Erica, a.k.a.
Gracie B. Love.
Gracie B. Love from the D20 Girls Project. I'm here at ConX, Kansas City. And she's going to tell me a little bit about what the D20 Girls Project is and how she got involved.
The D20 Girls is a national company, and part of how we got started as a company is that people would go to cons and they would see booth babes who couldn't answer the questions that people had, and so they got angry and they were like, you know, we could do better than that, and we can prove that it's okay to be a girl and be nerdy, that's still hot. So that's how the company got started. The manager of Indiana, who's now the vice president of the company, she actually is a good friend of mine, and she kept really trying to pull me in, and so it started gradually, and then I got interviewed by the Colorado manager, who recently left the company, and from there it just became this awesome thing where I got to meet new friends, and I don't think I've met a single person through D20 that I haven't instantly enjoyed being around, so that's pretty cool. And to be honest, here in Kansas, all we do is fun stuff. We have done a million photo shoots that are themed. We're working on an Alice in Wonderland themed photo shoot we're going to actually make our own costumes and things. The Cheshire Cat is who I'm going to be.
Cool.
And Jake Jackson, who's a monster makeup artist guy in Topeka, he's making a Tim Burton style mask for me that's the actual like prosthetic. It's going to be epic.
Awesome.
So that's my part of that shoot. We worked at Planet Comic Con. We were at DodecaCon. We are looking at more cons in the future. We're kind of deciding which ones we want to work at and which ones we want to play at. And then we are, about a year from now, we're going to host a very small con of our own. At this point, we're tentatively calling it Nerdfest.
Awesome.
It's either going to be in Kansas City or Topeka. We're still deciding. And it's going to be outside, so it's going to be nice, and hopefully a lot of people will come out to that, and it'll be good. Other than that, board game nights, super nerd night every other month at the Bottleneck in Lawrence is a ton of fun. Everybody should go. That's pretty much the things that we do. We get together and craft, and we drink booze and eat food, and that's what nerdy girls do together.
Doesn't get much better than that,
no.
Honestly. But yeah, if anybody is listening to this and thinks that this sounds fun, how would they get a hold of you to check it out?
There are a couple different ways. The first is if you search on Facebook for the D20 Girls of Kansas or the D20 Girls of Missouri, you're going to end up at a page that I'm an admin for. So that's an easy way to get a hold of me. You can also search for Gracie B. Love, and you should find me. In fact, if you Google search Gracie B. Love, I don't think you'll find anything that's not related to me. It makes it easy. That works. The other thing you can do is go to d20girls.com, and you don't have to have the www, but you go there and you can see the national site. You can join, make a profile, and if you make a profile, it alerts me, and then I get in contact with you. We sit down, we have an interview. It's usually, you know, I tell people that we'll talk for 15-20 minutes. I've never had an interview not go for like an hour or more, because once you start getting one of the girls talking about the things that they nerd out over, you just don't get them to stop.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of fun with that. We sit around, we drink coffee and talk about nerd things, and then I go back and I talk to the owner of the company, and I say what I think about the person that I interviewed, and he gives me the go-ahead or not, and that's pretty much the easiest way. And once you do get involved, it's pretty simple. We don't ever force you to go to anything, but we do kind of course, want people to be involved as much as possible. There are Facebook groups that we all hang out and talk in, and other than that, it's just, if you can go to cons, if you can go to events and things like that, eventually there are paying gigs that people can get, like since we're a national company, if you went to IndieCon, you could have gotten a paying gig with us. Things like that are pretty awesome. We don't do as much of that in Kansas yet because this is our first year, but Indiana has been going for a long time, so they get a lot of paying stuff.
And I guess one of the obvious, or at least obvious to me, questions is, do you have to be female to do any of the stuff? I'm sure it helps.
You do have to be female to be a D20 girl. Because
obviously,
part of the national company is, like, there's a lot of modeling that gets involved. We get hired for a lot of things. Orchard Corset, for example, is nationally contracted with us. We model some of their corsets and whatnot. So we do that kind of work. And so it is required to be a girl to join, but it's not required to be a girl to come hang out with us.
Okay.
So, like, when we do board game nights, it's for everyone.
Okay.
Like, we just like to hang out.
Yeah. So, well, I guess that about wraps it up. And, yeah, so once again, this is Gracie B. Love from the D20 Girls Project. So everybody check it out at what site?
D20girls.com.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. So that was Gracie B. Love from the D20 Girls Project. And everybody needs to go check them out. After I've just said that, I'm realizing pretty much any interview I do ends with me going, so everybody should go check it out. But in this case, I actually do recommend, like, really go and check them out. If you're interested in any kind of, like, nerdy stuff and you're a girl particularly, get involved with them because they do some really cool stuff. So you never see them sitting anywhere bored. They seem to always be running around doing something. So they're really cool. But back to some of the different little celebrity instances that we experienced. We were actually talking off mic about how Denise Crosby from Star Trek,
Next Generation.
She's on Next Generation? Yeah. Did she play the captain on that? I am horrible at remembering the names of anybody past,
security officer,
Jean-Luc Picard.
Tasha Yar. wound up getting killed on off-world expedition. You know, she was actually one of the non-red shirts to get killed in Star Trek.
Yeah. I know she wore a yellow shirt.
Yes, she wore a yellow. She was security.
But yeah, I got to sit in on a movie viewing, movie screening that she did of a, I think, about 20-year-old movie called The Eliminators. And she basically had not seen the movie since it came out. And she was just loving the fact that people were interested in watching it. This is a movie that's out of print. You cannot get it anywhere but on VHS, and even then, they're really hard to come by, I guess. So, one of the vendors was selling it on DVD, and she was all for it for some reason. But yeah, they start showing the movie, and she sits in the back row, just having a glass of wine with her dinner, and just basically started making fun of the movie herself. And that was pretty much like the go-ahead for everybody else to just start cracking jokes about it. And it is definitely a movie that could get the MST3K experience going with it. And she actually mentioned that herself. She goes, let's just MST3K this movie. This will be fun. So we all just sat there just making jokes the whole time. And it turned out to be a very, very enjoyable experience. But yeah, she was one of the people that I talked to throughout the weekend and was unable to get an interview with her due to unforeseen circumstances that, there was a, I'll go ahead and talk about it because I don't know if he was official press or not, but there was, I should probably mention, I actually went to ConX as an official press agent, so that was pretty cool. So I get to cover the show for Slugcast and for Entertainment Spectrum. So you'll be seeing a little write-up on Entertainment Spectrum in the next couple of days for ConX. But this guy, every time I would go to do an interview with somebody, there would be this guy who would just kind of swoop in and, I hate to say it, but interview cockblock is what I end up calling it. There's no real other way to say it. It was like, he would distract from the interview that was about to take place, the interview that had already been negotiated. And I actually heard this from several other press people, was that this guy, this same guy, kept just bumping interviews out of the way. And it got kind of annoying, but we all just kind of dealt with it after a while. Actually, during the Camden Toy interview, I actually was in line, had already said, hey, you know, I'd like to get an interview. He's like, okay, cool. And he was wrapping up with a fan. And that fan left. And as soon as I start to walk around to the other side of the table, this guy comes over. He's like, hey, Mr. Toy, can I get an interview with you real quick? And Camden Toy was cool enough to just go, no, I got an interview set up with this guy, but, you know, you can come back in a little bit later on. And the guy was just real pushy. He was like, actually, you know, it'll only take me like 2 seconds. You know, can I just do this real quick? And I'm like, man, we already discussed this. And it was just like every time we turned around, there was this guy. So, but yeah, I mean, that none of this is ConX's fault. It was just this guy was really just rude and disrespectful to other press. If he was an actual press guy, I won't say his name because he knows who he is and everybody else probably knows and they probably said it, so. But yeah, the interview process was pretty cool. Everybody was real willing to do interviews. I never got a single no. The only reason I didn't get interviews with everybody was just lack of time of, you know, me wanting to go see screenings or panels and, you know, getting to hang out with so-and-so over here and so-and-so over here. And it just, I got kind of spread thin on that. So next time I'm going to have to figure out a more scheduled way to go about that. So, was there anybody that you met that was relatively interesting to talk to?
Well, I met and stopped and talked to some of the vendors. You know, I find it interesting to talk to the vendors. You know, I enjoy the work that the actors do, and I'll stop to kind of maybe visit with them. But, you know, I understand they're there to kind of sell autographs and make money and meet with the fans. And I just, you know, we'll do a, hey, you know, thank you for everything you've done. I really have enjoyed your work. But I don't stop to get an autograph or an interview. But I like stopping and talking to the different vendors because they've gone different places and done different things.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, get out of the celebrity's way, or get out of the way of everybody else so they can get at the celebrity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just...
Did you get a chance to read... Was it Bill Blair you talked to?
Yeah, I did stop and talk to Bill Blair for a moment. Saw his booth there on the back. I mean, he was like all the way in the back. By the time I made it to that end, it was him and maybe two other people back there. It was like, wow, there's nobody over here. I can see it used to be full over here.
Yeah.
But it's nobody over here. But I did talk to Bill Blair for a few minutes. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. You're the guy that holds the Guinness record for the most costumed aliens ever. So that was kind of interesting. He actually had some of the prosthetic pieces that he'd worn on set. And he said, "No, this is one that I wore on this show, and you know, and here's a Romulan nose bridge, and here's a Klingon nose bridge, and you can kind of see the difference." Like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And he's got them wrapped up and sealed away, so that way they don't deteriorate. You know, those prosthetics will break down just from handling them. The oils in your hand will destroy them, turn back to the powder that they came from. But they were in really good shape, and you know, saw some of his Borg costumes, and it's like, you know, hey, did you get to keep any of that stuff? He says, yeah, no. There's some things you just don't ask for.
Yeah.
You know, a piece of rubber that's going to get thrown away. Yeah, sure, you can keep that kind of stuff. But.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a really nice guy. I actually got his business card. I think you did too.
Yes. Yeah. His green card.
It's green card because he's the alien actor. Just look up how many things that this guy's done, and it'll blow your mind. But he was very entertaining on Saturday night. He was hanging out in the bar with everybody and dressed in what I could only describe as a combination of Tarzan meets the Silver Surfer. It was like this silver sparkly spandex unitard thing with a loincloth that was also silver. It was very strange, but he was having fun. Everybody was enjoying it. It was very interesting just hanging out with that guy. And I talked to him for about 20 minutes just about special effects makeup. And he was really cool. One of the other people that I got to meet and talk to was a guy who's a voice actor named Tom Kane. Found out he's actually local to Kansas City. And you may not know his name, but you definitely know his voice.
Dude, who can forget Professor Utonium from Powerpuff Girls?
Yeah, and the big one... Wow, that was loud, whatever that was. barbershop. Yeah. By the way, we are recording at Monkey Printing, which is Ben's screen printing business, and various other printing needs can be met here, basically.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about that later, but Tom Kane is most known for doing the voice of Yoda in Star Trek films and various video games. I got to sit down and talk with him for a little bit, and if you listen close, you get to hear me wet myself a little bit as he goes into the voice of Yoda. So yeah, I did. All did. Two drops of pee came out. So, yeah. So, anyway, here's the interview with Tom Kane.
All right, I'm sitting here at ConX with Tom Kane, a voice actor known for doing the voice of Yoda in various Star Wars media. So, just kind of wanted to get a little info on you on how you got started in the business and some of your favorite projects that you've worked on.
Well, I started when I was 15. I was a bored teenager in Kansas City and just thought it'd be fun to hear myself on TV. It didn't occur to me anybody got paid for it. So I just started calling the local advertisers and, you know, basically, I'm sure horribly insulting them. But I was just like, you know, I just heard your commercial for whatever, and it was really bad, and I can do better, and if you want, I'll do it. Yeah. But so sooner or later,
someone started as any, honestly.
Somebody took me up on it, and I recorded something, and then a few days later I got hired because someone at an ad agency in Kansas City heard that and wanted the same voice. And by the time I got out of high school, I'd done probably 70 or 80 commercials, and by the time I got out of KU, I'd done 200 or 300, so I knew it's what I wanted to do for a living.
Well, I saw on your IMDb page some of the characters you've done were from various shows like Powerpuff Girls and Wild Thornberries. What is your... Give me one of your most fun experiences working on.
Well, boy, I mean, there's a lot of them. My favorite series overall, from just a performing point of view, is probably the Powerpuff Girls, because it was just a lot of fun. Yoda's my favorite character, of course, because I'm a Star Wars nerd. But the one of the things that sticks out in my mind working on the Powerpuff Girls was E.G. Daily, who was the voice of the Buttercup, was pregnant at one point. Well, 2 points. She had 2 children while we were doing the show. But at one point she was, just a couple weeks away from having the baby, and she was had this like cut off t-shirt that left her entire midsection just completely exposed. So she has a giant gut, and she was like, in between takes, she was like laying on the ground doing yoga exercises with her big belly hanging out because she was getting uncomfortable, and it was just bizarre. I was just like, what are you doing? We're trying to record a cartoon here. She's like, oh, my back hurts. Very weird.
At that point, you just moved the microphone down to the floor.
We did kind of do something like that. Found her some pillows.
Yeah. So as far as doing the voice of Yoda, like, how did you get involved with that? Were you contacted about that, or
no?
Was there
I started doing voiceover work for Lucasfilm. Oh, geez, 20 years ago, I started doing games and toys and. Mostly video games, and because of that, they knew that I could do a number of Star Wars characters. I was doing just miscellaneous characters at first, just random TIE fighter pilots and Imperial officers. But they started using me for Ackbar and Boba Fett and C-3PO, and they knew that I could do a Yoda. And Frank Oz was off shooting, I think the movie Three Men and a Baby, and was unavailable to do whatever it was, and they just used me, and that they just kept using me. So here it is, 12 years later, and I'm still doing it. So
that's cool. I know that pretty much everybody I've met has got a horrible Yoda impersonation. We've all attempted it.
Yeah. Yes.
And we all do a Chewbacca and all the different characters, but. You're actually able to get paid for it, which I think is amazing. So I just want to go ahead and congratulate you on that.
Yeah, well, it is. It is an odd thing to be a fan and now to be working on this, this universe. And I've gotten to know most of the original cast, and I hang out with them at some of these conventions and stuff. And it's just bizarre, for me to I'm just a kid from Overland Park, Kansas, and. Suddenly I'm having drinks with, Chewbacca and Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader. It's just very weird.
Yeah. I mean, there's entire conventions dedicated to it, so that's got to be fun to experience that on, sometimes weekly basis or however often you do it. So.
You could go to two of these every weekend somewhere. Peter and Angie, Peter Mayhew and Angie, I think they're probably gone 3 weekends out of every month doing these somewhere.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, you got
it. Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it. I do.
For some reason, I had to throw my own horrible one in there.
That's okay. Everybody does.
All right. So that was the first time I've listened to that interview back since I recorded it, and I actually paused it and said to Ben here. Something along the lines of, oh my God, I think I may have insulted him during this interview. I really hope I didn't. Because what I was intending on saying at one point, as you just heard in the interview, I said something along the lines of, we all do our own version of Yoda impersonation. But what I was intending on saying was, we all do our impersonation of Yoda, and you were able to do a good one and get paid for it. But what came out was what you heard, was essentially along the lines of, we all do a bad impersonation of Yoda, but you get paid for yours.
Open mouth, so, insert
yeah,
foot.
I inadvertently insulted Tom Kane in that interview. So, Tom, if you're listening, which I hope you are, I apologize now. I did not realize that I sounded like such a dick whenever I interviewed you until just now. So, sorry about that. I think your impersonation of Yoda is amazing, and obviously everybody else does too, or else you wouldn't be doing it. So, yeah. Hopefully that wasn't even more of an insult just now. So, anyway, moving on. So, I was able to check out a couple of screenings throughout the weekend, and one of them was for a film called Nailbiter by local film director Patrick Ray. I've actually met him at a couple other conventions, and every time I've met him, he's been really nice, and he's, you know, hooked me up with some screeners for some of his short films that I need to check out, and I, in my infinite slackerdom, have always neglected to review them. So the opportunity presented itself. Hey, he's going to be showing his new feature film, Nailbiter, at ConX. So I'll sit out, I'll sit here and check it out. But first, I wanted to get an interview where he just kind of talked about his filmmaking and all that. And then afterwards, he introed the movie, and I watched it and thoroughly enjoyed it. It is really cool. I like he says in the interview, I can't talk about it without spoiling it. So if you get a chance to see Nailbiter at a convention or buy a copy, definitely buy a copy. And I think that may be happening sooner than later, the ability to buy a copy yourself. So we're going to go ahead and play the audio from the Patrick Ray interview, and we'll be right back after that.
All right, so I'm at ConX Kansas City with Patrick Ray, director of the feature film Nailbiter.
How's it going?
Would you feel free to tell me anything you want about Nailbiter without any spoilers?
Without any spoilers. It's about a mom and three daughters, and they're like on their way to the airport to pick up their dad, who's just come back from the war, and on the way they get caught up in a Kansas tornado, and they end up taking shelter in this very cute house, and during the storm a tree falls on the cellar door, and they're trapped inside the cellar. And then from there it becomes a monster movie, so without giving too much away. And shot the movie mostly in Lawrence, Kansas, over the course of 2009 and 2010. And shot a couple scenes in Leawood. We started working on it in 2007, Kendall Sin and I. And it took us a couple years to get the financing to get it made. Now we're in the distribution process, which we've actually signed with a distributor. And so now we're doing all the legal paperwork and stuff that isn't very exciting, but is still part of the filmmaking process. So we're hopefully the DVD will be out, I think, in the fall or winter. Technically, this is the fall. Yeah. But I don't know what the release date is exactly, but it'll be pretty soon, I think. So, and it's been playing at film festivals since March. It's actually playing here tonight. It's also playing at the Montreal Horror Fest right now going on. And last week it played, it played Dragon Con a couple weeks ago. And San Antonio Horrific Film Fest. And it's going to be playing a Shriek Fest in Los Angeles in a couple of weeks. So.
Okay. Cool. Now, when I last met you, you had a series of short films that were out.
Right.
I'm actually a fairly good fan of... we'll cut this out because I forgot
what happens
the name.
In it?
It's the one about the radio.
Oh, Next Caller.
Next Caller.
Yeah, Next
okay.
Caller.
All right.
Yeah.
So I'm a really big fan of Next Caller, even though I forgot the fucking title. So... fun editing for this one. That starred
Alan Kaiser.
Actor Alan Kaiser, and he actually was the one who told me about the film. I actually checked it out,
right?
And I was like, oh man, this is really cool. And then
yeah,
that when we actually met, that was actually how I recognized you. So how many other
We've done, it's funny, people ask me, they're like, oh, you've done like 50 shorts, and I'm like, I've done about 50 shorts, but I'm only proud of maybe 20 of them. So, You know, we've been doing them since I graduated from the University of Kansas in 2002, and so we started working on short films nonstop, and we're still doing them. I mean, I've shot a couple this year already, you know, I've been playing them at the film festival circuit, and they've been really beneficial in the fact that basically a lot of these film festivals now, they know our work, so then when we had a feature film ready to go, they were really excited to see it. And you know, there's a certain formula to some of the short films that we've been doing. They're very Twilight Zone-y and very, like, you know, Tales from the Crypt style.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've got one that we're filming in 2 weeks called The Hourglass Figure, which is about a housewife who, she's just, you know, burdened with, you know, she's got all these kids, she's got all this housework to do, her husband doesn't think she's doing anything all the time, and she finds this hourglass that in her attic that when you turn it over it freezes time for like 1 hour and gives her an extra hour for her day. But of course there has to be some type of bad consequence that happens, and so it obviously goes south from
like
there.
A monkey's paw type situation.
Right, exactly. So we're shooting that in 2 weeks, and then I've got a couple other feature film projects that I'm working on right now. So
okay, cool. Anything feature film wise you can discuss?
I'm doing one. I'm working on one right now that's a comedy. It's a horror comedy about energy drinks. So I really want to take the energy drink, you know, fascination and take it to a horror movie level, I guess, and make it kind of fun. And also we have a nail biter sequel that we're working on, just because the way the first one ends, it leaves it open for the second one. So
I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't really given anything away. Why would you do that? It's hard. Well, with any horror movie, they're open for it.
Yeah, they're always
open. So that's really not
sequel.
Telling you anything.
That's
but.
Cool. So, but if anybody would like to check out any of your films, is there a way for them to do that online?
Yeah, you know, Get Off My Porch, which is probably one of our more successful short films, which is about evil Girl Scouts selling addictive cookies, is on Fearnet right now.
Okay.
So if you go to Fearnet's website, it's on there. And then there's going to be another one of our short films on there later in October. And then a lot of our short films are, if you go to senoreality.com, which is senoreality.com, a lot of them are linked on there. They go straight to Vimeo.
Okay.
And then, you know, just playing at film festivals, and I think we're going to end up releasing a compilation at some point of just the shorts. But one of our short films, which is called Hell Week, which is like a basically a sorority prank gone wrong short film, is going to be on the DVD with Nailbiter, so it'll be a DVD extra.
Okay.
So.
Cool. And if anybody would like to get in contact with you about possibly doing some film work.
Yeah, look me up on Facebook. You know, just look up Patrick Ray on Facebook and you'll find me. And I'm on Facebook a lot. So just contact me through there, or you can email me at senoreality@gmail.com. So.
Cool. Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. That was Patrick Ray from senoreality. And he, like he said, is the director of Nailbiter and various other short films. I highly recommend everybody checking out as many as can. I recommend Next Caller. It's really fun. We talked about that a little bit in the interview. So great guy, and I got to check out the movie afterwards and thoroughly enjoyed it. It looks very well made. Just really cool movie. You can tell why it's winning several awards at different conventions and film festivals. So everybody check that out. There will be links, and I'll even throw in the trailer for Nailbiter and a couple other of the short films into the show notes. So check those out as well. But yeah, coming up next, we've got one of the strangest, not really strangest, but lengthiest conversations I've ever had with anybody at a convention ever. It was awesome conversation that actually caused me to kind of have to say bye to you in the middle of...
Yeah, I was wondering what was going on. I was like, all right, now he's kind of busy. All right, I'll catch you later.
I'm referring to the interview that I did with Leslie Easterbrook. For those of you who don't know, Leslie Easterbrook played Mama Firefly in The Devil's Rejects. She played Callahan in the Police Academy movies. About two-thirds of the way through our conversation, I realized that she was on Laverne and Shirley, which was awesome. And she's just been in a ton of stuff, and she was there promoting a film that she was recently in called The Afflicted. which I will be watching and reviewing at some point for a future episode. But she was really nice, and I sat down. We had scheduled an interview at 4 o'clock, all right? So I show up a little early, about 3:30 or so, and I sit down at her booth, and, you know, she's kind of packing stuff up, and people are talking and everything, and we ended up talking for about 2 hours. So 4 o'clock comes and goes. It's now about 5:30, and we mentioned doing the interview about 8 times during that time. So, but we're just having this conversation for 2 straight hours. And then finally she goes, all right, let's just do this interview, because otherwise we're both just going to keep talking. So I was like, all right, that's cool. So we did the interview. It runs about 5 minutes, maybe. So then we do the interview, shut the recorder off, and then proceed to sit there and talk for another hour. So approximately 3 straight hours of me and Leslie Easterbrook just sitting and talking about just stuff. So it was everything from the reason I wear glasses. Yeah, exactly. Like, how did that get brought up? It just did. I did not bring it up. She actually asked, because she was talking about how she had some eye trauma. She recently got a LASIK eye surgery. And I was talking about how I wish I could afford LASIK, but I can't because it's too expensive. So I'm just going to keep wearing my glasses.
I'd just be sitting there going, it's Callahan.
Yeah.
It's Callahan.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And the whole time of, like, it was like, you know, Mama Firefly, Callahan, all these different film roles. And then over time, that all just diminished. And it was like, she's just a really cool lady who's just sitting here talking to me about just whatever. And it was just literally anything that you wanted to talk about, she could talk about for like 20 minutes about that one subject until somebody would change the subject and would talk about something else. But she was one of the nicest people I've ever met. And if you listen to past convention coverage episodes, you'll hear me say that about pretty much everybody, with very few exceptions. I'm saying with very few exceptions because there is one glaring one that I have not talked about on my show, and I probably will not. I've talked about it with other people in person. That's another thing. If you want to know that story, come up to me, buy me a drink, and we'll talk about it because it's pretty epic. Also, while I'm thinking about it, I met some people at the convention. They were running a booth for Postmortem Press. Everybody check out their books. They had a ton of them for sale, and they were really great guys. They came from, I believe, Cincinnati for some of them, and the others were down in Arkansas. And they had their own fun stories to tell about different conventions. And who knows, we may come up with a fun little YouTube series based on some of our conversations from this weekend, because it was hilarious. So look for that, or don't. I don't care. It's going to be funny either way. Even if it stays as just a fun joke, it was still fun. So, but anyway, check out Postmortem Press and buy some of their books. They're pretty great. So anyway, back to Leslie Easterbrook. So, sat down for a while, like I said, and recorded a quick little interview, and we'll go ahead and play that audio right now, and then we'll wrap it up for another time. So, all right, here you go.
All right, this is Slug. I'm at ConX KC with Leslie Easterbrook, and it is actually the final day right now, and we are the last two holdouts right now, so.
We're in this very empty, littered convention hall.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of cleanup involved for some people.
When I think of what it looked like an hour ago.
Yeah,
you know, packed. You never know it was the same room.
So, for those of you who are fans of mine, and those of you who don't know, Ms. Easterbrook, saying that right, Ms. Easterbrook?
Mm-hmm, I like that. That's
okay,
nice.
Okay, we'll go. Anything,
Ms. Easterbrook. anything but Mrs.
Yeah, she has been in such films as The Devil's Rejects. She played Mama Firefly.
I did.
Yes, very well.
I have to admit it. Thank you.
Yeah. And she is in a new film that was screened here called The Afflicted. And just tell me a little bit about about that film, if you could.
Okay, they actually had a screening. I guess you said that.
Yeah.
I had a Q&A, and it was, I don't know. Everyone's very tired because we've been having a great time, and they watched the show. I did a little Q&A afterwards. It's a hard film to describe, except it's based on a true story of a woman named Teresa Knorr, who killed her two daughters, and it's quite frightening. It's not like a literal story. That's not the same. A lot of exceptions were taken, and a lot of liberties were taken. My character Maggie, who's playing Teresa, is extremely over the top. Where Teresa was probably, a very subtle sort of normal woman. But this was it's an interesting case, an interesting story, loosely based upon the story of Teresa Knorr, and it's disturbing. It's disturbing, and I wanted to do it because I think we need to kind of point out what could be happening in houses around us, or if
it's
we
kind of
are
right under your nose.
In houses where there's abuse going on, is that there really is, there's a better answer. You know, it can be stopped.
Okay.
Awareness is a lot of it.
Yeah. And could you tell me a little bit about your experience on working with the Devil's Rejects a little bit?
It was just fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, I could not believe that. When I read the material that was sent to me, I was in New York, and the material came in for the jail interrogation scene for Mother Firefly. I just flipped. I said, this is so amazingly well written, and it's such a great, piece of drama, So I just felt from that moment on, I just thought this was the bee's knees, and I wanted to do it, and flew back to L.A. and put it on tape for with the casting director for Robin. Just hope. I did my take on it. I got on the subway right away in New York, and I rode all the way uptown on the subway, because you can kind of scream and yell on the subway, and you can't do it in your apartment or in your hotel room, because you'll get thrown out. So I was doing the scene and put it on tape and waited a few days and got the role. And I was overwhelmed. I thought, this is about the best thing I've ever read. Then I read the script, and I felt the same way about the script. And then I found out that Karen Black had done House of a Thousand Corpses, and I said, no, I can't do it. I can't take this job. She's an icon. I'm a huge fan of hers, and I can't fill her shoes. And then the casting director told my agent that she had turned it down, that there was some trouble. And I thought, well, if she turned it down, then yeah, I'll do it. But if there's any chance that she wanted to do it or they wanted her, then I didn't want anything to do with it. You know what it is when you idolize somebody and you're a fan. You just something seemed really stinky about
take,
the whole thing.
I can't take that.
Yeah.
So
it worked. It was just lovely. It was a wonderful opportunity for me.
Yeah.
A little walk on the dark side.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy the film, and I've watched it and rewatched it, and I saw it in the theater when it came out, and
bought
the DVD, and it's a great movie.
I'm glad that you liked it. I'm glad for Rob that you liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an amazing director. He's an amazing writer. He's he's such an interesting, intriguing, inspiring man to be around. One of the critics said that they thought that the film was like, but his work on Devil's Reject was like a cross between Tobe Hooper, Sergio Leone, Sam Peckinpah, and John Waters.
That's a
and
very
I
good
said,
description.
Wow, in 16 millimeter.
Yeah.
But just the colors, it gets dramatically, emotionally, and even like the colors in the lighting. I mean, just, and then, Tyler Bates is an amazing scorer and composer, and you put all that together and all the people who worked on it, it was just wonderful.
Yeah.
I thought, and I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and I'm going to go ahead and let you get back to what you're doing. So.
Okay, I'm just going to tell you that Afflicted is on demand now, so
okay.
If anybody wants to see a very disturbing story with Kane Hodder, plays my husband, and he was the stunt coordinator on it, and there are some really good things in it, so if you like horror or you like things that are disturbing, I think you might want to take a look at it.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, so that was the interview that I did with Leslie Easterbrook, and apparently I still need to learn how to talk on this microphone, because every time we come back from an interview, I'm spiking out, getting real, real high graphics on the screen, so...
You need to get a microphone set up like I got.
Get
some clamps.
I'll be setting out the picture of this, by the way.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. We got an actual microphone stand on my side, and then we had to kind of MacGyver something for Ben, and it's basically two clamps holding up a 2x4, a little piece of a 2x4, and then another clamp extending out towards him with a little
squeeze clamp.
It's like a squeeze clamp that's holding the microphone. In place. So
yeah.
It's very, very nice setup. So
yeah. And the end of the clamp that's holding the microphone, it keeps me the right distance away from the microphone. So it's like, oh, hey, I'm at the right spot.
Yeah. I don't have one of those, so I get way too close to the microphone and make it sound terrible. So anyway, overall, ConX was a really fun experience. It, you know, as far as sci-fi conventions go, for being a first year, it was not as busy as it could have been, but it was just right, in my opinion, for being able to go around and talk to people and get a lot of really cool conversations done, and just meeting everybody and just hanging out. So made some new friends there, which is always fun, and you know, saw some old ones and got to talk with a lot of really cool celebrities and hang out with all the vendors. And Leanne's cracking up again. What happened?
No idea. Right.
You said old friends. So yeah. Are the friends old age-wise, or are they friends you've had for a while?
It's friends I've had for a while. So, yeah. But yeah, I got to hang out with a lot of people and, you know, meet new vendors and shop around and, you know, pick out a bunch of really cool things. And I surprisingly didn't spend as much money as I thought I was going to.
Well, I walked in with $100 in my pocket and pretty much blew through all of it.
Yeah. I had my entire paycheck in my pocket, and I think I spent maybe $150, including meals. So I didn't spend a ton of money, but what I got was really cool. So, and surprisingly, I only got one autograph this time, and it was from Leslie Easterbrook. So I'll have pictures of that. Up on the Facebook page and on the show notes as well. So, really looking forward to next year ConX, and thanks again to Michelle, who I was going to get an interview with, but our schedules never really collided very well. So, sorry about that, Michelle, but she is the person who organized the whole event, and also thanks to Marla, who got me the press pass. So thank you very much for my first official press pass. It's now proudly hanging in my car currently from the rearview mirror, which is where it went as soon as the show was over, and it's stayed there ever since. But yeah, it was a great time. I'm really looking forward to it, like I said. And everybody needs to check it out next year. I'm assuming the site will be the same, so look up connexkc.com for future guest announcements. So, all right, that's pretty much going to wrap it up. If anybody would like to get a hold of me, you know how. At least you better. You've been listening long enough. If not, if you're a new listener, the way to get a hold of me is find me on Facebook. Just Google Slug, Slugcast, or whatever, you'll find it. Follow me on Twitter at SlugKC or at Slugcast. You can call and leave a voicemail at 816-200-7584, which is 816-200-SLUG. I did that one on purpose.
Nice.
That one was cool. So, yeah, you can leave me a message there, and that'll be played on the show. If anybody has any movie recommendations, just let me know any way that you feel like getting a hold of me. You can send an email to slugcastkc@gmail.com. And I think that's all the ways to get a hold of me. So, yeah, get a hold of me. Let me know what you think. And if you had any experiences at ConX, just feel free to leave a voicemail and tell me all about yours, and we'll plan them on an upcoming show. So, until next time, bye. I've been doing this show for so long, and I don't have a good way to go, all right, let's wrap it up. Here's a fun wrap-up message. It's all just, okay, bye. I'm done talking now. So, yeah. And until next time, do your thing, I guess, or something. It's probably different every time I say it, so.
Contact him for any suggestions.
Give me a recommendation, and nothing that is too vulgar. I know that I'll get recommendations from some people that will be just ridiculous. So, all right. Well, talk to you next time.